You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.
And now that heart is beating fast, and that's the rhythm I can dance to. I'm mighty glad I've got a chance to, that one big heart that's beating fast. Tomorrow morning, let it rain. Tomorrow morning, let it pour. Tonight, we're in the groove together. Ain't gonna worry about stormy weather. Gonna kick old trouble out the door. Beat out old trouble and drunk. Trouble on the drum, beat out old trouble on the drum, and kick old trouble out the door. Beat me that rhythm on the drum, beat me that rhythm on the drum, beat me that rhythm on the drum, and kick old trouble out the door. Kick him out the door, kick him out the door, kick him out the door, kick him out the
Welcome to Radical Australian Community Radio 3CR, streaming live on 3cr.org.au. This program is podcast. You can see a pretty picture of our guest, which has been taken by Henrietta, the producer. Now, I must apologise profusely for being 2 minutes late. Henrietta was out there putting the chooks in the shed because she doesn't want them to have bird flu, so she thought the chooks were more important than our guest. Good afternoon, Andrew Mays, M-A-E-S. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, Mays, yep.
Mays.
Mm. Hi.
Why is it M-A-I-Z-E? Why is it M-A-E-S?
I think that's Dutch spelling, and that's...
Dutch?
Yes, and that's what my German ancestors decided it was a safer name than Mose, which is German, way back in the old days.
Don't look at me, just talk in the microphone. You've got to talk to the microphone and look over the microphone. And in about 10 minutes, you'll forget the microphone's there. Now, I don't understand this, Andrew.
Yeah.
What year were you born, Andrew?
1958.
58. But I don't understand this business about your surname. What's going on? Are you an illegal immigrant or something?
No. My ancestor came out from Germany in about 1850.
Right.
He spelled his name differently.
They came to South Australia like most of the German immigrants?
Yes, and then they came here looking for gold.
Yep.
Ended up blacksmithing.
They didn't find any gold.
No, they didn't find any gold, no. And
so were they religious refugees? Did they have one of these weird Protestant sects?
No, they just came across to
South Australia. Because a lot of the communities in German communities in South Australia were basically persecuted for their religious beliefs, and that's why they came here.
Yeah, not that I know of. No. There's nothing come down through the family about that, so I don't think so.
No crucifixions or?
No.
No. I'm trying to relax the guest. He seems a bit tense.
Well, I'm out of my comfort zone. I'm usually sitting at home in my studio all alone.
Studio?
Yes, studio.
Excuse me. What are you doing in a studio?
Painting usually, or painting. Maybe just taking some photos, yeah.
All right. Okay, I'm going to ask you some questions. Uh-huh. Oils?
Yes, at the moment.
Acrylics?
Oils. Yes, acrylics.
Crayons?
Yes, pencils, charcoal, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep. Woodblocks?
No.
Lino cuts?
Used to, but I've sort of simplified things.
Lithograms?
No. You need a lot of equipment for that.
You need a lot of equipment.
Yeah, so don't have a space.
Yeah. All right. You were born in 58.
Yes.
How old are you? 68 now?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And you're a painter.
I just turned 68.
You're an artist, a visual artist. Is that what you describe yourself as?
Yes.
A visual artist.
Yes, I do, yes.
Didn't you ever grow up?
No.
All right.
That's easy to answer.
Well, let's get back to the old days. So where were you born?
Bendigo.
Bendigo.
Yes, Bendigo Base Hospital.
I didn't ask.
No, sorry.
Well, bed 6 or bed 8? You know.
In the afternoon.
In the afternoon.
The 16th of June.
16th of June. Yeah. Yeah. Now you're going to have every freak looking you up on the internet.
There's nothing on the internet about me. Or not much.
Not much. No. Aren't you a visual artist?
Yes.
Shouldn't you be all over the net?
No.
No. We'll talk about that in a minute. You're born in Bendigo. Any siblings?
No, only child.
Only child.
Yes.
What, your mother had one and said, that's enough?
Oh, I don't really know. But yeah, it seems that way.
So I assume your parents aren't still with us.
Mum is.
Yes, how old
She'll
is
be 100 this year in 100? November.
Is she still living at home?
I was with her this morning.
Were you?
She's staying at my place. I was looking after her, yeah.
Yeah, you're doing a little bit of family history, are you? Before the interview.
No, she's forgotten.
She's 100. She'll be 100 this year.
Yeah.
She's living in her own house, or?
Yes, but she's being cared for by my daughter.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So your daughter's on a carer's pension, is
yes.
she?
Yes. Yep. Yep.
It's a good thing, you know. It saves the government lots of money. It saves the taxpayer lots of money having somebody on a carer's pension.
Yeah.
Because they just live a basic existence. Yes. They live a basic existence. Otherwise, you'd be in a nursing home.
Well, that's the way we think of it. We don't think of saving money for the government. We think, we don't want money in a nursing home. We want it at home.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's a mechanism by which families can look after elderly relatives.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have to be a relative. You can get a carer's pension if it's a friend and you provide more than 8 hours of care a day. So I think people, as they grow older, they should keep that in mind. Because I think it was an excellent government initiative after a lot of pressure to introduce the carer's pension. But it's about the same as unemployment benefits. But it's enough to keep body and soul together. Yeah. So what was your father's name?
Kenneth.
You hesitated there. What's going on there, Andrew? Well,
nothing's going on.
No, I just thought.
You're looking for things, but nothing's going on.
No, you just hesitated. I said, what's your father's name? Which one? All right. Okay. So did you go to school in Bendigo?
Yes.
Yeah,
I grew up there.
You grew up in Bendigo. Doesn't mean you went to school in Bendigo.
No, but I did, yes.
All right. And what was your father's work?
So at work,
he
was a gardener.
So you went from blacksmith to gardener.
No, that was my great-grandfather. He was a blacksmith. He was the last blacksmith in the line, yes. Then my grandfather, he worked at the ordnance factory.
That was a place in Footscray, was it?
No. Well, they had one in Bendigo.
In other words, he was making bullets.
Well, doing stuff. I think he was more like a cleaner.
There's nothing to be ashamed of.
No, there's nothing. I'm not ashamed of him at all. He was a wonderful, wonderful guy. Dad was he started off, I think, working in nurseries and worked his way up different jobs along the way.
And obviously they sent you to a private school.
Oh, of course, yes. The best.
The best.
North Bendigo Primary School.
North Bendigo Primary, right.
Just around the block.
What was it like going to North Bendigo Primary in the 60s?
Torture.
Why?
I just didn't like school. I didn't.
You didn't like school?
No, I didn't.
Why not?
Surprise, surprise.
I love school.
Did you? Yeah. Oh,
that's
really?
Why I'm this side of the microphone.
No, I'm on this side. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Well, a lot of people, a lot of immigrant children love school because it's an escape.
Ah, right. See,
you, it was a torture.
Yeah, when I got home, I escaped.
Yeah, that's what I mean. The roles are reversed. Mm. That's why they do so well, a lot of immigrant children at school, to escape from the stifling environment they can find themselves in because of the cultural wars that are going on, you know.
Mm.
But there's obviously, you're a dinky die Aussie, born at Bendigo.
Yeah, that's right. Dinky die Aussie.
I assume you're a devoted.
You don't know me.
Well, that's why we've got you here. Yes. I assume you're a devoted Divided Nation follower, and you and Ms. Hansen are mates.
No, definitely not.
Definitely not.
No.
When did you realise you had talent as a visual artist?
When did my ego come in, you mean? I guess when I was at secondary school, I think I just sort of discovered that there was such a thing as an artist. Yes, that you could make a living from art. You could follow that pathway in your life, yes. Yeah. Up until that point, I'd just made a lot of stuff at home and had fun.
What did you make? What did you make at home?
All sorts of things. At that period of time, I was interested in history a lot, mostly English history, because my mum's English. Well, that's another. I can tell you that in a second if you want to hear that part of the story. So I got interested in. She used to encourage me to read, so I looked at books and mostly on the medieval period and stuff like that. So I used to, I made my own armour.
That's fair enough.
Out of bits of tin.
Oh, tin?
No, I made the dinky dye stuff and paper mache helmets and wooden swords. I wasn't allowed to make any metal swords because they might hurt ourselves. So we just bashed the wooden swords on the shields and. Then I got interested in Greek, ancient Greek art, so I made Greek armour. You know, those traditional helmets with the piece over your nose and the eye slits and, and the round shields and stuff like that, And I had models where I would, you could buy these models, plastic, they're only very cheap, and there'd be about five poses, like arms up like this. I can't do that on the radio. Sorry. But
You were going to paint for us. You said on radio.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that's later on.
That's later on. So I got sort of sick of the five poses, so I just would I got Mum to get me a little electric soldering gun, and they were made of plastic, and I just heat it up a little bit. Then I could bend the arm down before it fell off. If it fell off, I could just heat it up again and put it on in a different way.
You're a psychopath.
No.
Because
I could cut their heads off and put the different helmets on different ones. Yeah. So you get a...
You're a psychopath.
Then you could set up a sort of diorama.
Yeah,
that's what I used to do of a fight.
Well, they say you can pick a psychopath. You can pick a psychopath because they torture animals when they're children. So you tortured...
plastic soldiers. Then I got interested in heraldry and all the shields,
heraldry,
coats of arms, and I used to love the. That could have been the first place I got interested in design, because then I used to design my own shields and my own heraldry.
So you were talented before you actually realised you were talented.
Well, I don't know if you call that talent.
Most kids
having fun and doing that. A lot of the time, if I wasn't outside playing, spend a lot of time outside too, of course, in those days.
Yeah, but you weren't into go-karts, making your own go-kart and all that
No.
You're at home making swords.
Helmets.
Now, I'm going to ask you an embarrassing question about your mother. What year was she came to Australia? You said she was English.
That would have been 55, around that time,
She could be ripe for deportation, you know.
Oh, she's still an English citizen.
That's what I'm saying, because if you got here, I think it's before 1982, or it could have been 76, I can't remember the exact date, and you were from the mother country, you could live here in perpetuity and you could vote and she could still vote in elections.
She still does vote.
That's what I'm saying.
With the help of Rebecca, of course.
Excuse me, we don't want to know about fraud in your family.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. So, but it's interesting. There's this old cohort of English people who never took out Australian citizenship, who were still English citizens. So she didn't travel much overseas, did she?
She never left Australia.
No, because it's very difficult when you come back. I've got a friend who came here a bit when she was about four, and I think she's about mid-60s now, and whenever she goes overseas and comes back, she has trouble getting back in the country because she hasn't got an Australian passport. She uses her English passport. It's terrible, isn't it? Yeah. She's not an Australian citizen, and I called you Dinky Dye.
She's pretty Dinky Dye, man. She loves Australia. She didn't want to go back.
No. I can understand. Cole, can I tell you a funny story?
Sure.
Yeah, well, thanks. I don't know if it's funny. First time I went to England, I think it was 1978, and it was winter, and we were in this little five-story little boarding house, you know, and you have a little cubby. And I asked the landlady where the bathroom was, you know where this is going, don't you? And she said, on the fifth floor. And I thought, oh, God. So I walked up to the fifth floor, and guess what?
Yeah.
The bathroom was the coal room. Yeah. It's full of coal.
Nothing's changed. No bathroom.
No bathroom. Yeah. Now, let's go back. High school, was there a teacher that kind of influenced you with your artwork?
Yes, there was, yeah.
You remember their name?
No, unfortunately I don't. I remember her, visually.
Yep.
I've got a much, as you would expect, I've got a very good visual memory.
Mm.
Not so good with names.
Right. Well, describe her to us.
Describe her?
You said you had a good visual memory.
Ah, she was shortish, yeah. Probably in her 30s, I'd say, very approachable, very good at encouraging you and seeing your strength. She knew that I liked, I was interested in medieval things and stuff like that. So she introduced me to the idea of, the old tombs of the, back then, of the knights, where they would have a bit of a sculpture in relief of the knight lying.
Paper rubbings.
And then people come and do the rubbings over the top and all that sort of stuff. And that really got me going. And I did this, the first artwork in inverted commas that I realised was, something creative, of this. I didn't do a rubbing, of course, because I wasn't there.
That's right.
Did a pencil drawing of this rubbing.
Right.
Yeah. Yes, that's, I don't have it anymore, but that was the first artwork. And that was all because of her encouraging me and leading me in the right way,
Are you one of those kids you never pick for the football or the cricket school team because you're always indoors doing things indoors?
Yes.
Right.
Or I wasn't there. I just wasn't there.
You weren't there.
This
was Bendigo Secondary College or Bendigo North?
No, White Hills Technical School.
White Hills Technical School.
Boys. It was all boys at that stage.
Right.
Yeah, they did introduce girls the last year I was there.
Yeah. Did you throw axes at the teachers, the woodwork teachers? No?
Oh, my God. The things that the people did. I just sat in the corner.
Right.
I wished I could go home. I couldn't wait to bell the ring and get on my bike and run as quick as I could.
Oh, it was amazing, wasn't it?
It was just like pandemonium. It was screaming, shouting.
Most of the teachers were retired tradespeople.
Yeah.
And they had no idea. They thought they were dealing with apprentices, but they had no power over the kids. We've had so many guests who've spoken about their tech school experiences. So when did you leave tech school?
Well, when I got to Form 5, that didn't go any further. So, and I knew by then that I really wanted to do some art. I didn't quite know what that meant, but I knew I wanted to do it, so... went to TAFE and did what they call the tertiary orientation program, which is where you do a bit of ceramics, a bit of painting, a bit of printmaking, a bit of photography, and a few stuff with a few other subjects like English and stuff thrown in there to see what you actually liked, to sort of find your way. And then after that, if you followed the usual sort of stream, you would specialise a little more. You might specialise in painting or ceramics, or graphic art, or something like that.
How did you survive during that period? The scholarship, or...?
No, I was living at home, and, just mum and dad, they supported me to the hilt. Mm. What happened was, in the house that I grew up in, the land was given to Dad. That was, and he got that through the family, and he built this... the new international style. Do you know that style of house? It was in the 60s?
Yeah.
The sort of flat roof that goes back on an angle, and it's the very straight walls with big windows.
Yeah.
Very, very basic, two bedrooms.
Yeah. Well, you could build it yourself. That was the beauty of it.
Yes. So, and on basically no garden, just on this rocky sort of ground where Dad built this incredible garden because he was a gardener. He loved it. You know, he'd be out there every second that he could doing that. And then my grandparents, they just lived not far away, and they had a little cottage, and they were getting on, and someone, I don't know who, came up with the idea, oh, let's sell the cottage, sell the block of land we've got out in the bush, sell our house here and buy something where we can all live together.
Oh, yes, a fatal mistake?
No. Brilliant on my father's part, yeah, or whoever just thought of it.
Why was it brilliant?
Oh, because I got a, they were thinking of me when they, because I lost my inheritance, I lost my land.
Oh, right.
Let's make up to Andrew, he can have a studio.
He can have a studio.
Yeah, so I got this brilliant studio. We bought this house where we could all live together, divided in half, this huge old bakery.
Right.
And I had the old bakery, so the ovens were down one end, but I didn't touch those. And this great, huge area, which was too big for me, and this was when I started to go what I called a college, which was that TAFE college. That was in 1976. And I met, for the first time, other young people who were interested in art like me, which was a revelation.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. They thought like me, the other people.
So
I made some great friends, and I invited them back, and they shared the studio with me.
Did they?
I had
two. Did you charge
friends.
Them rent?
No,
oh, no.
Of course not. It was fantastic. They'd come down, and we'd paint, and we'd be there, you know, all night painting and all doing all sorts of stuff. And it was one of the greatest times of my life. Yeah.
Mm. So how old were you then? 17, 18?
I started off when I was 17. I got my license when I was actually during the year, like that, when I was in June, I remember getting my license, and then I got my grandfather's old car and
off you went.
Off I went.
So obviously the Vietnam War passed you by because you were too young.
Yes, I missed out there, yes.
You missed out your ballot.
My cousins had to go. Okay. They were older than me, yeah.
Oh, they actually went to Vietnam, did
they? Yeah, one did, yeah.
And did he survive?
Yes, yeah.
What's he like?
Oh, he's been affected by the chemicals and stuff like that. He's not very well. He hasn't worked for ages.
He's
a lovely bloke. He lives in Footscray. So I have a lot of history with Footscray too. That's where, on my grandmother's side, they came from Footscray.
Is that a country? In those days, Footscray was a separate country, wasn't it?
Was it?
It wasn't the gentrified stuff it is now.
No.
Yeah, we had an old lady. Well, she wasn't old. I think she was only in 60s. Vale Park, who's now passed away, or died, I should say, and she was a member of the Wednesday Action Group, and she had the typical Footscray slang, which would come out of her mouth, and she had her two front teeth missing because she'd been punched in the face once too often, and it was just classic early 30s Footscray speech. It was brilliant.
Some of the stuff that I don't know that you were telling me about the other day.
Yeah, look, I met this bloke on a vigil, so that's all we can say, isn't it, Andrew? I don't want to out you now.
Okay.
All right, so young bloke, you finished college, you're a visual artist. Didn't your parents say get a real job, train for something where you can get paid?
Oh, they had dreams about me being a teacher, an art teacher.
Did those dreams come to fruition?
No. I did a teaching course after I did a 3-year painting and printmaking diploma out at the college, which was part of the teachers' college, and it's now La Trobe Uni.
Was it a Preston Institute?
They call it the Bendigo College of Advanced Education in the BCAE.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. And so they had all the studios out there where you could do printmaking and not die of chemicals going up your nose and stuff like that, you know. Yeah. And so I had a great time out there. And then when I finished that after 3 years, I did a 1-year teaching, whatever they call it, postgraduate or something.
Go to Teachers College down at Melbourne Teachers College?
No, they did it all up there.
At Bendigo?
Yeah, in Bendigo.
My God, they're civilised.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. And so I did that year. But, and then I was uh, all you know, as far as everyone was concerned, I was all set to go off to Birchip and be a secondary art and woodwork teacher, but that's not what I had in mind, so I didn't go.
Well, you mean you still owe money?
Because you didn't have to pay for things.
No, no. They pay for your train and then you have to spend a year in...
No, nothing like that. No.
So you just pissed off to London, I assume.
No. I stayed in Bendigo. I didn't leave Bendigo.
Well, there's a future for an artist in Bendigo in the
70s. No, there's not. No. This was the end of the 70s, beginning of the 80s. Yeah. No, I met my wife back then, and I got married.
Uh-huh. In Bendigo.
Yes, in Bendigo, yes. Yeah. Remember, I was still, up until then, I was still at home, so I still had the studio, I was still, everything was
still
all...
Still at home.
Yeah.
Christ, 20 and he's still at home. I mean, most kids left home at 18 and 17 in those days. Yeah. And you were still at home. Well, obviously, you didn't make a living being an artist, did you?
No.
No.
No, no. So then I had a long succession of trying to fit into different jobs and not really fitting in and still doing my artwork.
Mm.
And
I assume your wife was working to support you.
For a while, yes.
Typical artist story, isn't it? The partner does the work, the artist does the paintings and sculptures nobody buys.
Yep.
So how old were you when you had your first exhibition?
My first exhibition. Well, you're talking about a one-man show.
Yeah, just a one-man show.
Oh, not for ages after that. Mm. It would have been in the 90s.
90s, right.
Early 90s, yep.
Yeah, early 90s.
Because I came down to Melbourne in 1987.
Right. Why?
Well, I got a grant. Just going back a bit, when I was in Bendigo, I was still working, of course. Eventually, Dad said to me, gave me an ultimatum because my grandparents passed away. He said, "Do you want to come and live with us here and carry on, or will we sell up, the house, and we all go our separate ways?" And so I said, "Oh, yeah, we better sell up, I think, and go our separate ways." The only way
they could get rid of you was.
They weren't trying to get rid of me. No, not at all. They were just very fair. So we went our separate ways. So that we sold the studio. No, I didn't have that studio. So I was just working in a bedroom, two-bedroom house, working in a small little bedroom.
So what mediums were you using?
Oil paint, yes. I was doing oil paintings.
Oh.
And so I got a grant and from the, as it was back then, the Australia Council.
Yep.
And so I thought, it's going to take this opportunity to move down to Melbourne. And it was a grant to have an exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I did.
5 years later, you had the exhibition.
Probably wasn't. It was probably a bit less than that. A
bit less.
I'm a bit hazy on the dates there. Sorry. Okay. Yeah.
And I assume it was a rousing success.
The first exhibition. I actually started off showing one or two pictures, and then I worked up to a solo show.
Right.
Yeah. So, yes, it was going well for a while there. It was sold a few pieces, right. And I was building a little career, and then all of a sudden, not the depression, but there was something. What do they call it?
Recession.
There was something happened. And the gallery closed down and everything imploded, the whole art world.
So which gallery were you showing at?
There was in Brunswick Street.
Right, around the corner?
Yes, just around the corner, yes. It was called Gurgis and Klim.
Well, that's the thing. The first thing that closes down is the arts industry in a recession.
Yeah, so I was left without a gallery and that I was sort of a bit... left without a job and it was a little bit here and there for a few.
And this, you were married
at the
then,
same
were
time.
Were you married by then?
Oh yeah, I got married in Bendigo.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So your poor wife supporting you all this time. Okay. All right.
At the same time as that happened,
yeah.
We got, as I think I told you, we were very fortunate and got a shared home ownership scheme for destitute
people,
destitute artists. And so we moved to Preston and bought a house. It was Renovator's Delight for $110,000 in 1991. I was like, with a big shed out the back that's about 100 years old and it's still there. That's what I was telling you about before.
I've got to get up and fix
the roof every year because it blows.
I assume it's in the DNA, renovations. Remember your father built his own home.
So we slowly just sort of fixed it up as we went along. But that was a big thing for us getting that. And then my second daughter was born also down here in Melbourne. Just before that happened, so everything was happening. We were living in COVID at that time.
There were a few visual artists in those times because there was a resurgence.
Yes, and then I had another, bit of good fortune from with my friends and stuff. A friend whose wife worked at a special developmental school, and they were looking for someone to fix the wheelchairs. I said, "Oh, that's me.
That's you.
One day a week. Yeah, great. Yeah. I'll get a bit of work." So they were very nice and gave me the job because I didn't have any experience. So she put in a good word for me, and. So I was trundling along there helping the physio as well. I got another day helping the physio because she needed someone strong to help get the guys out of the wheelchairs. And it's quite demanding. Even though you have a hoist, you've got to get it underneath the person, make sure it's they're well and truly safe to be lifted out of the chair, then put on the ground or wherever, and then help give them a bit of a roll around so they get their limbs moving or take them into a pool. The school built a pool for this very one of the great things about being in the water is your limbs loosen up and you can move and stuff. So then they said, "Oh, well, we need a mural for the pool." Andrew's an artist.
So you became a mural artist.
the thing was, I did it with the participants. I did it with the guys there.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I'd done anything like that, and it worked really well. Got in the newspaper. And that was a sort of the beginning of another little sort of really good niche for me to earn money. Make art, which was great. It was what I want to do, help people with a disability, plus earn a bit of money.
Right.
And from there... we did another project at the school off our own back, but then we applied to the government.
What was the school called?
This is Preston Special Developmental School. Our friend, Mr. Kennett, closed it down.
Did he? Was that a radicalising moment when you saw all the work you'd been done closed down within a few weeks?
I had the flick before then.
So when was that moment that you realised that, you had a radical streak in you.
Oh, that's...
I mean, not all artists are radical. A lot of artists are bloody conservatives,
Probably way back when I was in the bakery and my cousin would come in and tell me to get a proper job.
Oh, right. Did he tell you to get a haircut?
just
the job.
No, he had rather long hair, actually.
Is he the one that went to Vietnam?
I did have long hair then, you're right.
They'd say to you, get a job and get a haircut.
Yeah.
I used to say that to me and I said, because I used to, you won't believe this, I used to be a civilian CMF part-time cleaner when I was in medical school. And you'd go in, this was during the height of the Vietnam War, and you'd go into these, the NCOs, liquor place and the officers' mess, you have to clean it all up. And they see you coming along, they say, get a job. And I said, yeah, I'm working for you bastards.
Yeah, I think that was, it dawned on me that I wasn't fitting in somehow.
Right.
And I was getting a bit of a hard time over it.
So what did you do once the school was closed down?
I had a bit of a time where I had to let the art go with the participants, but because I had a bit of a network with other people that had come through the place, teachers and aides and stuff like that, I was managed to get a job with Melbourne City Mission.
Mm-hmm.
I was working in a house. You know how they have the houses they? And so that was good. I worked there for a few years, but I had to do sleepovers and all sorts of stuff, and it was really hard for my wife back with the kids and stuff. Yeah. So she said, "I, could, you know, could I try and find another job? I'll do my best." So I quit that, and I went to work for the City of Darebin, doing personal care for the elderly.
All right, yep.
And a little bit of cleaning, so less cleaning as possible. Little.
But were you doing any art during this period?
Yes, all the time when I wasn't there. The one for Melbourne City Mission, it wasn't a full-time one. You know, you had days off where you didn't go to the house, so I would paint. Yes, I was madly painting.
I'm going to ask you some things about your painting style.
Yeah.
Do you do a series on particular events, or is it more kind of abstract design? What type of work are you doing?
Well, there's a few different things I'm doing because I take photographs as well as doing my oil paintings. So it's always in a bit of a state of flux, but the photographs that I take, I think I told you about.
Hang on, nobody knows that we've spoken before.
Oh, okay, sorry.
We've spoken, and nobody. I know this is comfortable, and it's as if you're talking at home, having a chat. Yeah. But don't bring in the past that nobody's aware of.
Okay.
look.
That's the tape going backwards.
Yeah. If you want to meet Andrew, you'll meet him on the vigils in the steps of Parliament House on a Thursday. He's got nothing better to do. He needs a break from his painting.
Right. That's right. Yeah. Now I've lost my train of thought. Sorry.
Subject matter, style.
Oh, yeah. So I'm working on a theme of an anti-nuclear theme as part of my photographs.
Wasn't that the 50s stuff? Nobody cares about nuclear bombs today, do they?
Oh, yes, they do. Yes.
Well, what do you mean? Where have you been? Did you go and photograph some nuclear submarines? Based on your phone?
No, that's all...
conceptual, is it?
Yes, it's conceptual. Yeah, so I can tell you about one photograph, how that was made.
Yeah.
I have this mannequin out in the backyard.
Don't go any further. This kid's listening. A mannequin in the back. Everybody has a mannequin in the back.
Oh, yeah, go. I've actually got three or four, but this one.
Oh, my God. What are we talking about? Come on, this Andrew. Is not... Give me a break. You've got three or four mannequins, have you?
Of course, I have.
You're an artist, that's right.
I'm an artist.
That allows you, that gives you a license to have mannequins in the backyard, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, some of them are inside because I don't want them to get wet.
All right, okay.
This one was one of those ones that not entirely go solid. It's just a sort of a very thin plastic.
He's getting really excited, Andrew. He's moving his hands around the mannequin while he's speaking.
So it was just sitting in the backyard because I wanted to fill it with leaves and stuff, see what would it, you know, so I could see through it and maybe I'd get a nice photo. Right. Then my grandson came around and he loves to play soccer. So he was kicking the soccer ball in the backyard and he kicked it into the mannequin and it smashed. And I was very upset for a second. But then I thought, oh, no, this is fantastic because it's a great example of the fragility of life. You know, this broken mannequin. Uh-huh. So I quickly took some photos because it was like just hanging together there. And as soon as the wind blew it, it all just shattered. But it was just perfect for that few moments. So I got about three photographs of it. So with film, so I've still got my old camera of 1970s.
Do you develop your own film there?
No. I get someone else to develop it, yes. Right. I'm thinking of starting to develop my own film, but I haven't quite got there yet. I used to.
Right.
That's another long story. So then I had this film in the camera, which I'd taken of the mannequin, right? So I run the film through, take a few more things. Then when I'm rewinding the film, I don't take it out of the camera. I just rewind it and run it through again. It's called a double exposure.
Mm-hmm.
The second time I get to the mannequin, I've got a photograph of one of the planes that dropped the atomic bomb when they were doing all those bombs on the Pacific.
Yep.
It's doing this sort of sideways sort of a thing where it turns around, and so you can see the wings and everything. And I take the photo just as it's going through the center of the mannequin.
Right.
Bing.
Bang.
Yeah. So it's a great symbol of the fragility of life.
And excuse me.
Yes.
You can just dial that up on AI. What's different between...
No, what?
I mean, AI? Yeah, artificial...
Do you know how hollow that would be? How pointless, how soulless?
Yeah, but when you look at a picture, how do you know if it's got a soul or not?
I can tell.
You can tell?
Yes, yes. We've done 68 years of experience.
68 years. You can tell.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, you can easily, tell. Yeah. It's easily. You can tell just between AI.
Yep.
But a lot of people say, well, what are you going to all this bloody trouble for? I just press a few buttons on a computer and it's done for me.
Yes. Well, that's because they can't tell where the soul is. Yeah. A lot of people are walking around and they're, you know, for intents and purposes, visually dead.
So you've got to now, if you have an exhibition, you've got to say, done by a human.
No, I don't, because people will see it and they'll know.
They'll know.
Those that know will know, and those that don't know will, you know, it's you like talking care. Talking right. to that wall.
Why would anybody buy a photograph?
That's a very good question. Yeah, not many people, because they really, really like it, or it speaks to them.
Yeah.
Because
everybody thinks they're an artist. They've all got their mobile phones.
Yeah, no, just because you have a mobile phone doesn't make you a photographer.
You're kidding.
No, I had the last lot of photographs I sold. A guy came to my house and he was actually putting in some kitchen cabinets, and he saw me covered in paint.
Right.
Oh, not my clothes were covered in paint.
Right, yes.
He said, "Oh, are you doing some painting on the house?" And I said, "No."
That's the ultimate insult, isn't it?
That's what you get all the time.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can just, you know, if you're trying to keep your head down and not let anyone know you're right, you can just say, "Oh, yes, I'm painting the house." But in this case, I said, no, I've got my studio just here. Mm. And I opened the door and showed him. He said, "Oh." So he came inside and had a look and he thought it was fantastic. And he saw all these pictures. He says, "Wow, this reminds me of that. And that reminds me of something else. That reminds me of my father. Wow. I want to buy that."
Right.
So, yeah, he bought. So he bought a little painting that I'd done, and he bought five photographs.
Yeah. But that was.
So you
can't live on one little painting and five photographs.
No. I know you can't. I never finished the story about my work with the disabled people the art.
Yeah.
So what happened was I had a few jobs where I didn't do any art because I was just, you know, happy to find a job and do my art, you know, separately. And then one day, my wife, she's really good at this. She's good at organising and seeing things and stuff like that. She found this ad in the paper for the perfect job for me.
Mural artist?
No. Working in a studio, making art with disabled people, helping them to make art and sell it.
Right.
They wanted four artists. Mm-hmm. So I applied for that and I got it. And I was there for 17 years and 4 months.
That means superannuation too.
Yeah,
You don't get that as a freelance artist.
No. It was great and it was a fantastic job working with those people. They are so brilliant. You know, I had some fantastic times there over the years.
Did you do any group exhibitions with the disabled artists?
No, we didn't actually. No, I didn't. That's one thing I didn't do. We could have done, but no, we didn't do that. No, but we did a lot of different stuff. Yeah, it was fantastic and helped build up a good reputation for the studio there. And they were so excited about it. They set up another studio and then another one. So they had three different. Yeah, it was. It's really good.
So where was this?
This was out at Lower Plenty at a place called Araluen.
Oh,
Centre.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, so people came during the day?
Centre, yeah.
Was some residential or just?
No, there was some residential at Lower Plenty, but not the other places.
Right.
They had one at Rosanna
and
one at Diamond Creek and one out at in Greensboro.
Right. Mm. And during that period, did you do any independent art?
Yeah, I was always doing my own independent art all the time, yeah. It was a bit harder at some stages because sometimes I was working there a lot and sometimes I wasn't. It's a flexible thing. Mm. The other artists would come and go, so I might have to fill a hole just for a while until they got someone to take to their place, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
In the end, I was the longest serving artist there. Other artists came and went, yeah. but out of those original ones, I was the last one.
Do you think you made the right decision to continue your art? I mean,
absolutely.
Most people. Well, I'm asking.
I don't know if I can say this, but it's not even a decision. It's not even something I think about not doing.
It's not doing
it's me.
Right.
I am an artist.
You're an artist.
That's my being, yeah. Mm.
Mm. But what type of an artist? There's all types of artists.
Yeah, I'm not a conceptual artist.
No, you're doing real things.
I try to sort of get a point across with my work.
Yeah, yeah. What type of points are you trying to get across?
Oh, well, like I said, one is the anti-nuclear one. I have one about environment as well, and how the environment.
Well, you believe in the climate emergency?
Yes, I do.
I mean, there's a lot of people in this country think it's all bullocks, you know.
Oh well, it's not. So I've had a long relationship with the environment up around Bendigo since I was a young boy, because Dad, being a gardener, he was very interested in that as well, and he was a member of the Field Naturalists Club, and we used to go out looking at plants and all sorts of stuff like that. Mm. He was really into that, protecting the native plants and stuff like that. Yeah, and so every time when the orchids would come out, we'd be out there looking for certain types of orchids. So stuff like that. So I used to walk in the bush. So I've carried that on since he's passed away, and then what would happen was I'd be walking through the bush, and it's a lot of an old mining areas, so you got to be a bit careful. But people would come and they'd just dump their rubbish in the holes, which horrifies you. But then I started to notice how that nature even starts to take back those things that are dumped out there. And when you're an artist, you're interested in colour and texture and all these things, and it really started to inspire me. So I just take photographs of the, as things would wither away, rot away, and become part of the environment, covered with leaves and, into the soil. They'd be buried in the soil. Some of it wouldn't right away. And I'd start to notice all this, and that got me interested in that sort of thing.
Mm.
So you incorporate that into my photos as well, into those double exposures I was telling you about.
So you're doing mainly photos these days?
No. That's just the photos that I'm doing. When I do my oil painting, it's a little bit different.
Right.
I'm more interested in... Well, yes, actually, could be more. You could describe it as being more conceptual. Mm. I'm interested in our human condition more. What are we as humans?
Well, you can put the human condition on a canvas.
Oh, of course you can. So what are we? You know, in one sense, we're just energy.
Mm.
In another sense, on an atomic level, we're atoms buzzing around. What is consciousness? All these sorts of questions interest me. So
they may interest you, but do they interest anybody else?
Yeah,
when they look at
2% of the population, yes.
2%.
They look at my work, yes.
All right, I'm going to ask you an embarrassing question.
You want to ask? Yeah. What?
When was the last time you sold a piece of work?
Last year.
Last year?
Yeah.
That's not bad. For an artist, that's not bad. No, seriously. Yeah. And when was your last solo exhibition?
Oh, last year.
Last year. That's when you sold the
That's
piece,
when right? I sold my piece. Yeah.
Right.
I've been in group shows since then. I've been.
So you regularly do group shows?
Oh, all the time.
All the time.
Just about every 2 months or 3 months.
Really?
I'm in a group show. Yeah.
That's a lot of work.
Yes, it is. And I also do it for. I don't do it for. I help Rebecca. Because she's up in Bendigo making some collage.
Right.
She brings it down and I help her get that out too.
Right.
I'm trying to get a collective going. So there's another artist which we've also got interested, and she's showing some work. I got her work into a group show with us last time, and she sold a piece first off.
So that
was good for her.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
But getting back to the creative process, what do you think about AI? How is it affecting other
AI,
artists?
It's diabolical. Mm. I don't like it at all.
No, I'm sure you don't like it, but
yeah.
How is it affecting your work in terms of interest? People have interest, or they lost interest, or does it change the way you interact with the public?
Not me personally, because I avoid it like the plague. And it's not going to...
Well, you're never going to be famous, are you, if you avoid it like the plague?
I don't know about that.
Well, you've got to die
then. Say that, but lots of people in the art world are like myself. They are very wary of AI, so it's not...
Is it just a fait accompli that AI
will take over the art world?
Is it just a copyright issue, or it's more about the creative process?
Oh, it's both. Yes, both. It's the creative, definitely the creative process. Oh, I saw this. My wife wanted me to watch this thing on ABC the other day, because normally I don't watch mainstream media anymore. It was they had this little sort of a test thing, and sometimes you wonder, you know, about these things. It's just TV or whatever, but it was interesting. They had photos, eight photos of just portraits of people, their heads doing different things. Four on that line and four on that line, and they're all the same size. They sort of made them as close.
Listeners, he's an artist. He's using his hands. You can't see it, but he's showing us where that everything is. But keep going, Andrew. Yeah.
Sorry, I guess this is the habit I've got. Yeah. The visual thing.
The visual, yeah.
So they tried to make them uniform and look as, you know, like fit in with each other as much as possible, but they weren't taken by the same photographer or at the same time or anything like that. And they were all different sorts of people from different walks of life, old, young, different ethnic backgrounds. And they're... You've got to tell us which are the AI ones and which are the real people.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a group of people there, and they had a piece of paper, write down which ones, number one, number two, number three, number four, and they give them, you know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes to do it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, of course, that happens. They don't take 15 minutes on the TV, but just, you know, it's all magic, and then it happens, and they get the results back. And they go through each person to embarrass them. Did you think, oh, no, this would... And then, you know, crosses come up on the AI ones and ticks come up on the... Right. Yeah, so there are four AI ones and there are four...
So what's the rate, success rate?
Oh, everybody's making mistakes. Yeah, they can't tell.
Everybody. Could you tell the difference when you...
It was pretty hard because it's on television and you're a long way away.
And you don't get the three-dimensional aspect.
No. And they don't really tell you until... you know, they don't give you time to sit there for 15 minutes to have a look. So it was a bit difficult.
So AI
so
is
didn't
a,
try to...
Yeah, so AI is a real competitor then, isn't it?
Not at all, no.
Not at all?
It's just...
Well, it's just a party
trick. It's just fake. Illusion. It's just a party trick. Yeah. So a lot of the people were saying that they asked them before, of course, they had to strip them up. Oh, do you think you can tell? It's, oh, of course. And so they couldn't.
No.
Yeah.
All right. Getting back to you, we've only got about 4 or 5 minutes left.
Really?
Good grief. That's right. Like I tell you, after about 15 minutes, you forget you're talking to a microphone.
You do. You're right.
I know I'm right.
I didn't believe you, but you are right.
You didn't believe me.
That I would just...
Well, you're a very smart man not believing me. I'm just the host, you know. We talk lies all the time. So you say you don't listen to the mainstream media anymore or watch. So where do you get your information from? And you're not interested in the net?
Mostly from 3CR.
3CR?
Yes.
How long
you... I listen to the news every morning.
How long have you been a 3CR listener for?
Oh, about 5 or 6 years now.
And you've been in Melbourne since 89 or 87.
Yeah, I know. I'm really ashamed of that.
How did you find out about 3CR?
Through my daughter.
A bit much smarter than you, eh?
Oh, very much smarter. Smart,
you know, they say the apple doesn't fall far from... I think in this case, the apple fell a long way from the tree. Well, she's a regular 3CR listener, is she?
Yes, and she used to volunteer here for a while.
Did she? Huh?
Yeah, I think she volunteered on my show for a while. Rebecca.
Could we give her a surname?
Same as me, Mays.
Mays. Well, you never know. She could have changed it. She could have been embarrassed by her artist dad, you know.
No.
All right.
About
5 years.
Yeah.
So what programs are you interested in on 3CR?
Well, as I say, I mostly try to catch the news.
What, in the morning?
Yes, in the morning.
Breakfast show?
Yeah, 7 from till 8:30.
Yep.
Yeah, not always, but you know, it depends what's going on, of course.
Yeah.
So Anarchist World.
Well, you don't have to say that.
You asked me. Yeah. That's what you were the first show that I always listened to.
And you still listen to 3CR. God, you're a patient man, Andrew.
I listened to Think Again.
Right.
And I listened to what is it, Friday Rave, is it? That was it called?
Friday Rave, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The, Jacob's Friday Rave.
Yeah, yeah, Jacob. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And I listened to, I know you might laugh because I'm not an economist, but I listened to radio MMT, I think it's called, MMT or something like that, yeah, yeah, MMT. Yeah.
Modern Monetary Theory, MMT.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, money comes out of thin
air. I'm trying to, because all these things were buzzing around in my head that I hear talked about, like AI and the politicians, how they do their economics. It's all there, but then when I hear it on the radio, it makes more sense. I know, oh, yes, that's exactly what I saw all that, but I couldn't explain it like that.
Yeah,
I put it into words that make sense.
Well, the good thing is you don't listen to any of the music shows, I notice.
Well, my taste in music is a bit, minimal.
Well, it's you and the mannequin in the background listening to the jazz program on a Saturday.
John Cage and people like that.
Right, right. And obviously you listen to the sports show here at 3CR.
No, I stopped listening to sport years ago.
That's terrible.
I know, I'm not Australian. So you, you pointed that out to me.
I know. I said your mother wasn't. You're Dinky Di. She's still an English citizen. We need to get rid of people like her. 100 years, deport her back to England.
That's
right. That's the way the... Isn't that interesting? That's the way the debate is going, isn't it? You know?
People
have been here for generations and they're not welcome. It's just sad. So have you got any hope in the last 2 minutes? Have you got any hope for the future?
Hope for the future?
Yeah, big question.
I'm wavering.
You're wavering?
Yes. I really want to have hope, but there are so many things that are just, just worrying me. That
like what?
Oh, well, AI for a start. Yeah. Not just in art. It's affecting everything. Mm. And the internet, computers, when you read a few books, which are recommended on the shows that they listen to, like Think Again and that, it's like you can actually see what's happening to society, how it's being affected. People are being changed and set against each other.
Yeah.
And then you realise how it's happening.
Yeah.
The manipulation of people.
Yeah. I remember I was...
They're just like brainwashed.
Yeah. I was walking down Collins Street one evening a few years ago and I counted 18 people and 17 were on their phones.
Yeah.
It's just...
That's just a small thing. It's just amazing. Happening to their brains.
Remember the good old days? If somebody was screaming and carrying on, you'd cross the footpath. But these days, everybody's talking to themselves.
Oh, they're taking a picture of it with their phone.
Henrietta has told us we've got a minute to go.
Well, I'm even thinking of getting rid of my smartphone.
Have you?
Yeah, I can't afford to just get rid of it because I just only bought it about 2 years ago.
But when
it's obsolete, I'm just going to go back to it and one of those old phones.
You can't get an old phone.
Yes, you can.
No, you can't.
Yes, you can.
Only a burner phone for illegal activities.
Oh,
well,
illegal activities.
Thank you, Andrew Mays, for sharing your life with us. And I told you, life moves on quickly and the show goes on quickly.
Yeah.
If you've got any friends that are artists, we'd be happy to talk to them.
Yeah.
Of course.
Oh, good.
As long as they listen to 3CR.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you, Henrietta. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Andrew Mays.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.